Hello and welcome to our podcast. Now, this isn't quite a Middle East analysis podcast because our regular listeners will know that we only have one more. I'll try not to cry. I am genuinely upset about that, but there we are. But I am joined by our usual guest for Middle East analysis, Dr. Harry Hagopian, and I'll tell you why. We're going to talk about Dr. Hagopian's book, The Armenian Church in the Holy Land. A very smart little book, I must say. Very accessible, very readable. Harry, first of all, hello. How are you?
Hello, James. It's a pleasure to be here, even though I'm putting on a slightly different hat with a slightly different colour to it.
You are, but it's still part of our MENA provision, I have to say.
It is very much part of the MENA because we are talking, and the book talks basically about the Armenian church and the Armenian community across Israel and Palestine. And therefore, as in all communities in the MENA region and certainly in the Holy Land of Jordan, Israel, and Palestine, what starts as a discussion on church and people then strays a little bit, just a little bit, into politics to give it a flavor of reality and not only dwell on history.
But I suppose in contemporaneous culture, certainly, most of the Armenians we know live outside Armenia, don't they? They live in the diaspora.
Well, Armenian community is divided really into two populations. You have the Armenians who are living in Armenia, which was a Soviet republic and is now a fully independent republic in the southern Caucasus, bordering Russia, bordering Iran, bordering Turkey. And the population there of Armenians with Armenian citizenship, James, is roughly about 3 to 3.5 million. Then you have double that size of Armenians who are living in the diaspora. And by the diaspora, we mean everything from the United States to Europe, to the Middle East, North Africa, and across the whole world. And a lot of those people living in the diaspora trace their roots and their origins to the Armenian genocide of 1915, because there was a very huge Armenian population in Turkey. After the genocide, most of them were either killed or ran away, and then they started forming communities across the whole world, including the UK. There is a very vibrant community in Manchester. There is a very vibrant community in London. And there are small, what I call mission parishes across the UK, straying all the way into Wales and Ireland as well.
Now, you'll forgive me for not talking directly about the book in this introduction, but that is partially coped within the book itself as well, because the Armenian Church in the Holy Land, you know, we're talking the context in an Israeli-Palestinian reality. And so my first question was sort of, well, I wonder, I know Harry's very familiar, he knows it inside out, so I know why he's written about this, but tell our listeners why you've written this little book.
Well, I've written about this book because when people talk about the Israeli-Palestinian context, people are forgiven to think immediately in terms of Muslims and Christians, Arabs and Jews, or Israelis. And therefore, there are smaller communities that have been living there in the Holy Land, in Jerusalem, in Bethlehem, in Jaffa, and elsewhere for years and decades and centuries. And for me, this was really nothing more and nothing less than a labor of love that started, James, very, very many years ago, when one of the Catholic institutions in London asked me to write a chapter in their publication on the Armenian Church in the Holy Land. I wrote that chapter, which was published years ago, decades ago, I would say. And then some 10, 15 years ago, I took that and sort of hammered it into a small article with the help of a friend who also did some of the research with me. And then last year, I thought, you know what? The Armenians have been witnessing, have been living, have been praying, have got a substantial presence in the Holy Land for centuries. In fact, I also mention in the book that when we talked just now about the Armenian genocide in Turkey of 1915, a lot of those Armenians also ended up in Jerusalem. And who were the people who welcomed them with open arms? The Arab Muslims. And it is there that they established their seat, the Patriarchate, with all the institutions and the churches and the monasteries and the clinics that are pertaining to the Armenian Church. And then they have spread across the whole region. So for me, it was really a question of highlighting this community. and saying that there is a community there that has been faithful to the region, that is faithful to the anthropology and the sociology of the region, but one that also has been very, very proactive in politics. And I'll give you an example. Some of our listeners, at least, but I know you do, are aware that I was one of the people involved in the second track negotiations during the Oslo years between Israel and the Palestinians. What I always have fun reminding people, non-Armenians, even non-Jerusalemites and non-Palestinians or Israelis, is that during the very heat of the Oslo years and the negotiations between Israel and the Palestinians, during what is now known as the Barak years, the Yitzhak Rabin years, the Yasser Arafat years, the Bill Clinton years, where so much was happening and which eventually, unfortunately, ended up with a big fiasco, what was funny is that there were four Armenians who were key in the political realities of those negotiations. Those four Armenians, you would think, four Armenians? That is hugely disproportionate to their small numbers. So sometimes it's not only the bark, but it's the bite of the Armenian community that counts. And for me, this was a book to remind people, look, there is a church, there is a patriarchate where the patriarch sits. He's one of the three patriarchs of the Jerusalem, the other two being the Latin Rite Catholic and the Greek Orthodox. And those three amongst themselves are the only religious leaders who have access to what is known as the status quo arrangements or agreement. In other words, they are the ones alone who can decide what happens to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem and to the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem, amongst other Christian institutions. So you talk about the Latin Rite Catholic Church, you talk about other churches, but you do not necessarily always remember that the Armenians have played a big role and still do, as the book says with some anecdotal stories, about what they're doing today, from pottery making to mechanics work to medicine to law, everything that you can think of. They have had a part to play in it.
But in a sense, don't you think, maybe you've made this point ever so slightly, but that's been a little bit unrecognised up to this point. I would say even me myself, before I met you, and you can even communicate the sights and smells of Jerusalem to me, even though I've never been there. So I know there are plenty of Armenians in Jerusalem. But I didn't really understand the significance. I didn't understand the contribution of the Armenian church.
Well, the contribution of the Armenian church is something that this small book of mine, which is, again, a labor of love for the Armenian community, it's a labor of love for my family and for the community that lives there. If people were to read this, and even though they might not have a copy of the book, as you and I know, all they would need to do is log on to my website, my personal website, epektasis.net, and there is a page which has this book. They can read it online or they can download it and read it. It's only 65 A5 pages, and that is for free. So when they read all this, they would realize how much Armenians have played a role in that part of the world and how important they've been in the life of Palestine, of Israel, and of Jordan. But you are absolutely right. If people don't point out to the fact that there are different communities in the Holy Land, people are so much taken up by the conflict between Israelis and Palestinians that they only see the Holy Land in monochromatic terms. Whereas for me, one of the many beauties of the Holy Land is its polychromatic nature, is the fact that it's eclectic, it's diverse, it's colorful, it's active, it's lively, it's bustling in its bazaars. And one thing to just highlight the importance that the Armenian community has, and it's not me as an Armenian bragging about something that is not there, is the fact that the old city of Jerusalem, which is the hub of the whole city, but which has been also the hub of negotiations between Israelis and Palestinians, is divided into four quarters. One quarter is the Jewish quarter, leading up to the Wailing Wall. The other is the Muslim quarter. The third is the Christian quarter. And the fourth is the Armenian quarter. And anybody who is visiting Jerusalem, if he or she does not go to the Armenian quarter, or at least walk through those arched passageways, at least smell on the one hand the sandwiches and on the other hand the pottery work, and look at the patriarchate, the monastery, the convent that the Armenians have there, St. James's Convent, then in my opinion they failed in their pilgrimage, if that pilgrimage is really to understand the Christian legacy that this city imparts upon the world.
I love that, because you've just given me not only a challenge, but a directive, really, because you know I'm going to Jerusalem.
I know you're going to Jerusalem. I am delighted that you're going to Jerusalem at long last, much as I cannot mask my disappointment that you and I will not be in Jerusalem at the same time.
Mine too.
Because we would have had a ball, you and I, and I would have then showed you my Jerusalem and not the institutional Jerusalem that people see. However, I am delighted that you're going to go there, and it is a challenge. I know why you're going there, and I know what you're doing there, so it really is a challenge for me that you go there, and I'm going to incarnate that challenge very clearly, James, because I'm going to give you three copies of this small booklet of mine to deliver to my brother at the Armenian Patriarchate in the Armenian Quarter of Jerusalem.
Goodness me, that really is a challenge, but one I shall try my best to rise to, obviously. Right, on that note, if I'm going to say something in Armenian, that make it easy, please, that might mean something to anybody I meet there, what should I say?
Well, the easiest one, of course, is a form of greeting. Mm. When you meet somebody in English, you say hi. In Armenian, all you need to say is parev. P-A-R-E-V. Parev.
Parev.
Parev means hello.
Okay, I can manage
that. So if you can manage that, I mean, more than that, you have little words. You know those booklets they give tourists when they're going into a foreign country to remember common phrases and to learn them to communicate with the local people? I mean, there are words like inch peses, which means how are you?
Inch peses.
Exactly. Inch peses is how are you? Parev is hello. And then, to make life easier for you, because Armenians do sometimes simplify life, they've got it complicated enough already, is at the end, if you want to say goodbye, you don't need to use the long Armenian word, you just say bye-bye.
Perfect for us English, isn't it?
Exactly.
Now, I'm not going to give away chapter and verse about the book, because to be honest, it's not a very big book. You
no,
can consume it in one
book.
Sitting. And actually, well, I will compliment you on this, not just because you're sitting opposite me, but I love the way that you don't just launch into the Armenian Church in the Holy Land. You talk about the Armenians adopting Christianity in 301, many centuries ago. You talk about the context.
During the first Council of Churches of Ephesus, before many other churches came into existence.
Well, you go back to the apostles, don't you?
I mean, we're back to the apostles, which is why it's an apostolic church. Mm. But it's also interesting because one of my favorite church leaders of the Armenian Orthodox Church is Catholicos, which means Pope in Armenian, is Catholicos Karikin the First, whose seat, like the Vatican is in Rome, his seat is in Armenia, in Echmiadzin. Mm. And I was talking to him. I used to love the man, and he looked at me pretty much like his son. I was telling him one day, I said, Father, you know, the Armenian church is really ancient. And he said, Harry, it is ancient, but it is not archaic.
Yeah, I read that. That's a lovely touch. A lovely touch. Like Gregory the Chainbearer. You and I were talking about Gregory the Chainbearer.
Gregory the Chainbearer is one of the prominent patriarchs of the Armenian Church who used to drag his chains and go from institution to institution, raising money, alms for the church and for the convent in Jerusalem to make it viable and to make it able to sustain the monks, the priests, and the lay people who are living and who still, by the way, live in there. Because when we talk about a convent, we're not talking only about Armenian monks there. We're not only talking about a beautiful library. If you do go there, and you must go because you have a mission to deliver those books, but more to the point, go for 5 minutes. I'll try and arrange for my brother to meet you. So he takes you to the library and he gives you an idea of the place. It's really fascinating, and this little book of mine basically goes into that. And when this man was going around trying to get the money, it's because even today, as I was just saying, there are lay people, Armenians from Jerusalem, who live within the campus, as it were, of the convent. In small little houses and not so small little houses. So in a sense, it is very inclusive. It's a small community. Let's not exaggerate. We're not talking about the whole of Israel or Palestine. Mm. We're talking about a tiny speck within a much larger set of realities. Yeah. But that reality for me is very important because it's a martyr nation, the Armenian nation, and it's a nation whose baptism is by blood as much as it is by water. And in that sense, I believe that there is so much that unites the Armenian Orthodox and the Roman Catholic churches. You see, all those differences that go back to Ephesus and Chalcedon, the hypostatic differences between one trend of Orthodoxy and the other, this does not exist between the Armenian and Roman Catholic churches, which is why it really is a question of culture and identity more than deep theological differences that keep the two churches vibrant. And if you look at the history of the church, contemporary history, starting with John Paul II all the way to Francis, there's been so much give and take between the two churches. It's remarkable, which is why that when I put this little book together, I was delighted that Bishop Declan Lang, who is the chair of international affairs at this conference of bishops of England and Wales, is the one who wrote the foreword to it.
And a very warm one as well.
And a very warm one. Well, yeah. Bishop Declan is a warm person, and he starts by saying in his foreword in the book, it doesn't take long for somebody to realize that Harry is Armenian. So don't we know it in our podcasts? So in a sense, I encourage people, if only to go for 5 minutes into my Epectasis website, look at the page where the publication is put, have a look at it, and you can read it in installments. You can read the bits you want about it. But don't pretend to understand the Holy Land just by floating in, floating out, and doing tourism, or as I call it, running where Jesus walked.
Very good. Now, I'd say one thing that you've got across throughout this podcast, and incidentally, I was meant to be keeping this down to 10 minutes, but we're doubling up because you're so engaging, but never mind. You know, you really seriously can see Armenians and the Armenian church punching above its weight, can't you? You can see a significant contributor to the realities of that region.
I can very much see the Armenians and the Armenian church and the Armenian community across the countries, because there are three, Palestine, Israel, and Jordan, contributing, punching way above their weight. That's absolutely true. But what I can also see is that the Armenian community, at least in Jerusalem, unlike in some other places, does not live in a bubble. It does not. It hasn't carved a ghetto-style neighborhoods for itself away from the realities of the rest of the country. In Jerusalem, the Armenian community is as engaged and as dug into the Palestinian community and the problems of the Palestinian community as anybody else. At the beginning, when I used to talk about this, people would say, oh, you're Armenian, you're not Palestinian, therefore you have nothing to do with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And my answer to that was very simple. On the first count, you are right. I'm Armenian, not Palestinian, because these are two different ethnicities. However, on the second count, you're dreadfully wrong, because many Armenians across the whole of the country are very engaged with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I just told you about those four Armenians punching way above their weight politically during the Oslo years. Well, not only that, you look at medicine, you look at schools, you look at hospitals, you look at hands, craft, anything you think of, the Armenians have had a say in it. And as I said, they're one of the leading churches in so far as institutions go in that part of the world. This book is simply a recognition of a community that has been there for centuries. And this is precisely why when people say, how can I buy this book? I tell them, you can't buy it, because as you might have noticed, there is no price on it. This is not a book for sale. This is a book that I just offer people. And this is a book, as I said, that everybody can read on my website and hopefully on yours too.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask you. I mean, if, with your permission, obviously we'll carry that as a download.
Certainly.
Too. Listeners, check it out. It is a freebie. They say nothing in life is free, but actually this is. So the Armenian Church in the Holy Land by the good Dr. Harry Hagopian is free and available for download, and we'll direct you towards that. Honestly, it's worth a read. It's not going to take you very long, and it will give you history, context, and a bit of entertainment, to be quite honest.
It would give a bit of entertainment and some fun as well, and it is quite fitting. I thought that since we're going to conclude these podcasts by the end of this month with our century, with the 100th podcast, and then this series is over, it's quite fitting, I think, that this book has become part of that legacy.
Absolutely right. Well, Clooney, Kardashian, Hagopian, you know, all punching above, all making themselves heard. Armenians aren't quiet, you know.
Armenians,
they rattle their chains like Gregory. They get themselves heard.
Absolutely. They rattle their chains. And if you ask me the truth, they rattle their chains a bit too noisily sometimes too.
It's part of the charm.
But I am delighted, James, about one thing in this whole longer than expected podcast of ours, which is that you actually put me on a par, on a level with the Kardashian sisters. I am delighted. Do you know about the Kardashian sisters? And let's end on a funny high note. The Kardashians were in Armenia. Kim Kardashian was in Armenia with her rapper husband.
Kanye West.
Yes. When Pope Francis was in Armenia last year. From there, she flew in her plane, went to Jerusalem, went to this very convent or church whose picture is on the cover of my book, where she had her son baptized by a very good friend of mine, Archbishop Ari Shirvanian. So in a sense, there is a connection there between the Kardashians and the Hagopians.
Great. There you go. You always catch me out. I thought I was making a trivial, you know, off-the-cuff comment at the end there. And you've got some religious context.
And I'm delighted, of course, that given we're talking in a Catholic setting, I'm delighted to say that not only has Bishop Declan Lang got a copy of this book as a big thank you for all his support over the years, pastorally and otherwise, but I also offered a copy to Cardinal Vincent Nichols, too.
Lovely. Well, I think it's well worth a read. Epectarsis.net. It will be on catholicnews.org.uk attached to this particular podcast. And it only really remains for me to say, hopefully not for the penultimate time, but possibly, thank you ever so much, Dr. Harry Hagopian. It's been a pleasure as always, and very ebullient and well done. Thank you.
Happy reading to all.